I can't put into words still how special it feels. It's such an honour to be asked to lead your country.
Silence means so much to me. It's more than just wearing the dress. It's about hopefully inspiring the next generation.
Welsh netball is in a really strong position at the moment. We're growing and we're looking forward to the upcoming season.
What do you remember most about that first cap?
The first cap, God, very little. That's a long time ago, very little.
Thanks so much for everybody's support, and especially those at the Netball Show, because I know you've supported us for a long, long time.
The Netball Show with Andy Lamb and Sasha Shipway.
It's Andy, welcome to the Netball Show with Mizuno. Part one of two, as we look at ACLs and the effect that it's having on our game at the minute. I've been speaking to Charlie Curtis and Louise Rose from Team Bath. Charlie began by telling me what her typical week involved.
Normally, in an uninjured week, I would probably have two or three weight sessions, conditioning session, and two on-court sessions with the Super League. And then I also play at the uni, so we would train with them once a week. And then matches on the weekends, whether that's Super League in season or Prem as well. And then uni games would always be on a Wednesday. So I guess that would be my typical week. Usually quite a lot of travel involved in that as well.
From having that demand and being very active every day of the week almost to the opposite of doing nothing almost, how tricky is that to deal with?
Yeah, well, I think that was one of the things I probably found the hardest, because it's such like a good stress relief just to play a bit of sport. And I think going from training all the time to not really at all is really hard. And a big part of that is, like, a lot of my best friends play netball as well, and I wasn't getting to see them as much as usual. So I think that was really difficult. And it's a really hard balance as well, because a lot of people advise you to continue to go in all the trainings and stuff. And actually, I don't think that was right for me, because I didn't want to sit on the sidelines watching everyone do what I couldn't. I think that was too difficult. But at the same time, then I lost that amount of time that I usually spent with my friends. And obviously, I can see them outside of netball, but it's just really different, I think. So that's a difficult balance, and it's different for everyone as well, I'd say.
Louise, what about you on that?
Yeah, so obviously I'm from a different perspective, in which I work for the franchise, and sadly I've seen so many girls do it, and teams that I've either coached at the uni or obviously, yeah, at a higher level people, knee injuries is a very common one. And I think, yeah, it's definitely given me a perspective, being the one injured as well. I was quite lucky that it was towards the end of the club season, so I wasn't, I guess, that distanced or suddenly become separated from a team in that way. But you can see how easy it is to feel, I think it's the athlete's identity. Like, I could see from Sharty that you go from playing at the peak of your game to suddenly not being able to do anything at all. And I think it's really important, and it's something I know the coaches here do, to make sure that person still feels part of that team, even though they're not in the playing capacity. And I definitely had some advice with players in the uni teams before that have done their knees, and then that's the Bucks season wiped out. And yeah, Bucks is obviously a big part of university life, playing sport, but making sure they're kept engaged in the sessions and, yeah, still feel part of that team. But I guess, yeah, mine was more of a lifestyle thing that I struggled with, just not being able to walk properly or going running or cycling, and just being able to walk around at pace around the STV was my difficult challenge. Yeah, I think it's really important. I've learned from this that, yeah, people are kept engaged in the team as much as possible, even though they're not on the court. And actually, I think the ones that really understand that more are probably the ones that have had injuries themselves as well.
To add to what Lou says is, actually, if unfortunately you do go through an injury, actually in netball there's so many people who've been through it.
Mm.
And a lot of the well-known netballers have been amazing with both Lou and I in reaching out, because I think people who've gone through it understand, and they're the best people to talk to when you're about to, if you're going to have surgery or if post-surgery in your rehab, like, just talk to someone who's been there, because trust me, they'll want to talk to you too, because it's so nice to share what you're feeling with people who actually understand.
And that'll be the same with you, won't it? I mean, if anybody is going through a similar kind of process at the minute, get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think as well, like, it is lovely, and everyone always goes, oh, you'll be back. And I think now, what are we, like, 4 months down the line, and actually this is the first time we can actually see that once you hit those milestones, that, oh, okay, I actually will be out. I think I will be able to do that again. At the beginning, I don't think anyone prepared me for the pain and frustration it was. And I, there were definitely points that I thought I wasn't going to be able to bend my leg or whatever. I thought I was different to the rest of the population because I couldn't do this. And it was good that we had each other to ring up. And then we started doing the first couple of months of our rehab together, which was, I think if we wouldn't have had each other to push each other and also to see someone else similar, it would have been quite a lonely road. And also, you don't want to be a drain on people constantly moaning about your knee. And I always think, oh, there's someone worse off. But it's quite nice that, you know, you can speak to each other about it without feeling that you are moaning, or they obviously share similar moans. But that's just one thing that I would say, if unfortunately anyone else did a similar sort of injury, that it is that first bit is pretty lonely, painful, and you have to be very disciplined on yourself and patient as well. But also, I think the big thing I've learned is everyone's body is different. I think the way you go through this, like, there are those, like, milestones that you have to hit, but actually it's to listen to your body, and you'll start to get to know your body better, I guess, with what feels right and what doesn't feel right. And it does eventually will be okay if you stick out your rehab and physio and things, but it is patience, and it does take a little bit of time.
And also with that, like, everyone's body is different. I think that's so true. And also, we all have very different surgeries, which really affects your rehab. For example, I got a hamstring graft so I've injured my right leg, and I took my hamstring graft from the left leg because that's what I had decided with my surgeon, whereas Lou got a quad graft. And people do it very differently, and I think do your research and ask your surgeon as many questions as possible, because everyone is different. But then also, when you're, I think it's so easy to compare yourself to everyone else in rehab, because you're trying to, who's running, who's jumping, who's can bend their knee to this degree. It's so black and white that actually it's too easy to compare yourself, and you've just got to remember that everyone's bodies are different, and B, everyone's had a completely different surgery experience. People have torn different things, done different. And I waited 6 weeks before my surgery, which gave me a lot of time to prepare for it, whereas other people go into it within a week. So I think just try and not compare yourself, as easy as it is to do. So I know I've done that throughout the whole process, and actually it's not helpful for anyone.
And keep a diary. I've kept a diary of each week since I had the operation, of different things that I've managed to do. And it does start off quite small, like literally we were a couple more centimetres of bending, or like we were sat on mats at one point, like just, screaming in agony, bending each other's legs. But actually, when you get to that, this point, and well, now we're both going into the gym by ourselves and able to do our own things, it is quite good to see that we've come a long way since our painful bending and straightening days.
I don't really want to dwell on the actual moment that it happened. Could you almost tell that something was up when it did?
Yeah, so we've both got quite different stories.
Yeah, we...
I'm already shaking. It's getting a bit medical.
No,
be kind.
You go first, Charlie. Yours is more professional.
It was mid-season. We were playing against Wasps at Bath.
Boo. And
I literally took a ball, turned in the air, and I kind of felt something shift a bit in my knee. And it was okay, a bit weird, but fine. And I actually like ran around like for another, half a minute or something. Went off, saw my physio, and I had quite good range and stuff, and it didn't feel that bad. And so for a couple of weeks, we were just trying to work back to playing, and it just wasn't really getting any better. So I went to go get a scan, and that's when I found out. So it wasn't massively painful when I did it, and actually I'd say it was a lot more painful post-surgery. But I think for me it was quite uncertain of really if anything had happened until I got that scan.
Mine was a bit of a different scenario. I was just playing a club game on a Sunday, And yeah, I've always been very lucky. I've never ever had any injuries before. I've been one of those that can just go on and run around without warming up or cooling down. So mine was a little bit of a shock, but yeah, it was one of those classic days. Went with the bare seven, and I got a dead leg about 2 minutes before I did it, and I went out on a centre pass and changed direction, and then I just heard mine snap and pop, and I screamed and was quite hysterical. It was very painful. I was convinced I dislocated it because I'd already seen one of my friends do that a year before, and I thought, great, I've got to lie here with my kneecap hanging out for a few hours waiting. But the first thing I started shouting was, is it in? Which, yeah, one of the girls told me it was, and then I sort of thought, oh, okay, that's good, but I just knew something was wrong with it. And I think once it's like a really, really bad pain for about 5 minutes, and then it suddenly dies down. It's very strange. And then I got up and thought I could carry on, but the whole thing gave way, so I was wheeled off, and that was it, really. But yeah, I knew straight away that I'd done something, just because I heard that sound, I guess, that people, that feel of something popping, and it was very painful. And then, yeah, I obviously had a similar, I had a scan like Sharti did, and yeah, that confirmed the whole thing. So yeah, it was not the most pleasant experience, and I struggled to watch netball after that, which wasn't the easiest with my job. Having to watch some of the Super League games was I found quite a struggle, because I guess I just did it running and changing direction by myself. I wasn't knocked over or anything, but at the same time, sadly, it can just happen at any time, I think, and there wasn't anything in particular that set it off, I guess.
But that must be tricky in itself, because you're obviously both a fan of the game as well as, and then not being able to play, pretty tough.
It's actually, yeah. So when I found out, I actually went home from uni for a few days just to kind of get away from it, because I think, for me, uni is really associated with netball, and I just wanted to be with my family, and I think it's the best thing I could have done. So I went away for a bit, and I actually came back on my birthday for my scan, which probably wasn't the best timing or the best birthday. But yeah, I think for me, I just needed some space. And actually, kind of as I alluded to before, people are like really different. And for me, I just needed to get out of that world and out of people do exactly what I just couldn't do and really, really wanted to. For me, that was the best thing. But I also know people who just get stuck in and are absolutely at every single training, every single game, and that's what works for them. So yeah, personally, I just needed a bit of space from it all, and slowly get back into it, because also, like, the girls understand, and people know that an injury is hard, so lots of people have been there. So when I did decide to kind of reintegrate a bit with the team, they were amazing. And yeah, thank God I had Lou and also Nick Humphries, have done her as well, and both of them have been an amazing support for me, so yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the general support of the SNC and the physios and the teammates and even Blades in your case, Charlie, as well. I mean, it's everybody, isn't it?
Massively. Like, you need that support network. And I think you have or most people have a really strong one from playing anyway, because you need that network. And I think that just translates so much into post-injury as well. And I think the people around you are the ones who kind of keep you going through it all. And yeah, they're really important. I'd probably say it's the most important thing, actually. I don't know about you, Lou.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm very lucky that, yeah, the environment I worked in, it's understood, and I was, yeah, got the facilities here as well, and yeah, all my colleagues were supportive, and obviously the players as well. It's just, yeah, I guess I found out as well how sad it is how many people have actually had the same injury, and yeah, that's really good, just to be able to other people to emphasize with it, but also understand it. And yeah, because it affected my job, and I was suddenly limited with some things I could do because I was on crutches for a good 5 or 6 weeks, I think, which is great now. I think, oh wow, that was actually quite a short period of time, but at the time it feels like you're not walking properly or anything for a while. But yeah, it was a bit of a change, I guess, yeah, with lifestyle, and like, you're not able to drive, even like going and doing your food shops. It's little things like that that I guess you take for granted when you're able to walk and or your body's working normally. So yeah, I think it's really important that you've got loads of people around you, and yeah, definitely here at the university and the franchise, it's got that, and yeah, very lucky for that.
Yeah, and the other thing I say, I think we both went home. So I had my surgery in Bristol, and then I went home.
Yeah,
we were both at home for 4 weeks, and my family was absolutely amazing during that time. I think for me, I would have really struggled to be at university, like living in a house by myself, trying to do all that. So if at all possible, like, yeah, just being with my family was really good in that period of time. It allowed me, I think, to recover probably a bit quicker than having to push through and start walking straight away.
Yeah, definitely. I think you do feel like you're a burden on everyone because you can't even go and get a glass of water or something like that. So actually, yeah, your parents are the only ones that you can boss about. I think I had a little whistle for the day afterwards, which, yeah, soon got taken away from me. But yeah, they're the only ones, I think, that you can, they can look after you. And then, yeah, when we came back to uni, it was great, actually. Like, the people were really helpful, and well, Shati was revising for exams, which is just crazy, and that she managed to do all that as well. But we had a little setup in the office and had ice going and all sorts. So yeah, no, we were lucky with the environment we came back to. But I definitely think, like Shati said, going back home just for those few weeks after any surgery, I think is the best. I would always recommend that to people.
Yeah, I remember walking around home, and as Lou said, like, when you've got your crutches, you can't do anything, not even get a glass of water. So I had a little backpack that I carried everywhere. So I had my backpack, and I'd like go to the kitchen and fill up both my water bottles and backpack on. So because of that, I've named my new ACL Dora after the
We know that 1.4 million women and girls across the country are playing netball, but the clear majority are still playing in running shoes or generic trainers, which don't provide the necessary support required to play the fast-moving and dynamic sport that netball is today.
So as a sports injury specialist, one of my biggest bugbears is seeing netball players playing netball in running shoes. The reason this is annoying for me is because running shoes are designed for running in a linear motion. They're not designed for stop, start, change direction, and looking after the stability of a player as they're coming down from the air. So the benefit of a netball shoe over a running shoe is they're designed to give you more stability and allow you to change direction with better grip, and also allow you to give it a more stable knee and ankle position when coming down from a height, therefore reducing the risk of injury in those two areas.
You are listening to The Netball Show with Mizuno. Thanks for being here. Graham Johnson is marketing manager for Mizuno UK, and he's been telling us about the growth of the brand since they launched 3 years ago. More on the hashtag Make the Swap campaign and the importance of having a specific netball shoe.
We noticed there was only at the time a couple of brands involved in netball. So if you look at other sports, you could probably get 8, 10, 12, 15 different brands out there to give a real choice of fit, feel, comfort and performance. So we released a range of netball shoes based on a kind of hybrid combination of our volleyball and handball shoes, studied the movements, worked out what features needed to be in the shoe, and that was the range we released 3 years ago, which was okay. It wasn't amazing, but now 3 years later we've really developed it.
No sportswear manufacturer can obviously say with confidence, oh, where I was and you're not going to get injured, but have you noticed different levels of research into it?
100%, yeah. And you're right, no manufacturer can say that. And there are so many functions to a sports shoe, you know, in any sport. But one of them is to provide the best possible footwear for that sport, for all of the movements, for all of the dynamics, for all of the protection. And if you get that right, you just give yourself a better chance of not being injured. And you would have maybe seen this with Mizuno over the last year with our Make the Swap campaign. And our Make the Swap campaign was not saying wear Mizuno shoes above all other brands. Our Make the Swap campaign was saying wear a specialist court shoe above, say, a running shoe, where the movements are so very different. So, you know, the differences between a running shoe and a netball shoe should be massive. You know, running's purely linear. It's forward. And then with netball, you've got landing, you've got turning, you've got change of direction, sharp stops, acceleration. So what makes a netball shoe more suitable to that sport than a running shoe? Well, pretty much everything. So that's where we base our science from, and that's what we look at. We look at those movements and we look at what can we put in a shoe to make sure you've got the best possible chance of A, preventing injury, helping prevent injury, and B, performing better. So grip, incredibly important as an example.
Yesterday we had a tweet on the whole ACL issue itself from Kate, and she said that some of her teammates would even use hairspray just to get that extra little bit. That's maybe not the best way to try and solve injuries. Bit of hairspray on the bottom of the shoe.
Ah, for stickiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I hadn't heard that one. If your grip isn't good enough, then I guess you'll try everything, right? I mean, where the market's quite tricky is, as a sport on the whole in this country, and probably most countries, definitely Australia, definitely South Africa, yeah, you have a huge amount of girls and women playing outdoors. And then at the level, when you come and watch, you know, Premier League, Super League and international netball, it's all indoors. And it's very hard to produce a one-size-fits-all solution. It's pretty hard to produce a shoe that works on all surfaces, especially if you're outdoors and it gets wet, which is the ultimate danger time. So winter netball is pretty hazardous. So hopefully, you know, we can be part of developing the market and at some point saying, look, here's our outdoor version and here's our indoor version. But given that we know that not that many people playing netball are actually even wearing netball shoes, that's the place we want to get to first. And first of all, we want to say, look, here's a shoe that's going to protect your movements whilst playing netball. Then hopefully a few years down the line, we can say, okay, if you're doing it outdoors, it's this shoe, and it's indoors, it's this shoe. But right now, what we do have is a sole on our shoes that has got two types of rubber, a really hard wearing rubber that you would see, for example, on the bottom of a hard court tennis shoe, which is very, very durable. And that's injected with a sticky rubber that you would find, for example, on the bottom of a squash shoe. So actually, we have developed a rubber that we think works pretty well on all surfaces.
The last time we spoke, we looked at the amount of strapping on people's ankles, and the last thing we need to see is that, really, isn't it?
I'm not a physio, so I couldn't comment on whether that's the right thing to do or not. I can well imagine it is psychologically advantageous. I can imagine that if you've ever had an ankle injury, then perhaps there is a requirement for it. But where I would look is how many other sports with aggressive motion and change of direction and, you know, more physical contact, as an example, you don't see that many ankle braces out there. So I don't know. I'm a firm believer that if you are a child growing and your body's changing all the time, for your body to develop naturally and wear footwear in a natural environment. Look, everyone that's played sports got hurt at some point. Everyone's got injured at some point. And it could be ankle, it could be knee, it could be hip, it could be anything. Literally anything can happen when you're playing sport. But I do passionately believe that from a young age, if you're in the right shoe that's allowing your body to move naturally and freely and using the right muscles and tendons and ligaments, then again, you do just have a better chance of progressing, you know, injury-free throughout your career. And look, you know, what happens if you jump up and land on someone's foot and roll over? Impossible to avoid, but yeah, Nothing's going to protect you from that. An ankle brace, a cast, a high-cut boot, nothing. So there are freak accidents in the sport that are always going to prompt injury. But absolutely, let's just talk about what's the right shoe to be in to protect you.
Tell me a bit about the new range then.
Well, yeah, we touched on it earlier, how that's been developed over the years. It's pretty strong now. There are five senior models and a junior model. And I think one of the areas we always believed, coming back to what's the right shoe for the sport, was that a slightly lower profile shoe than perhaps a running shoe. You know, I think the higher off the ground you are, we've always felt you leave yourself susceptible to a little bit of imbalance. So we made quite low profile shoes. At the early stages, what came with that was they were perhaps a little bit too firm for some people. So if people are used to a running shoe or used to a softer netball shoe, then going into a firmer shoe would perhaps cause them some discomfort. So What we've tried to do in the last year is produce all of the technologies that we know are right for the sport in terms of movement, but then just find ways of just making the shoes a little bit more comfortable. So now I think there really is a shoe for everybody. I think when we released netball shoes, there were two shoes available. Now you've got five plus a kid's shoe. And that sounds like a lot, and it's more than any other brand has got, but there is a reason for that. If you look at a running shoe range by any brand, there'll be 12, 15 models available. And the reason for that is because there's so many differences in body shape and size and weight and technique that obviously one or two shoes probably aren't going to work for everybody. So, you know, why is somebody that has this really desperate requirement for a cushioned shoe necessarily going to be even thinking about a super lightweight competition shoe, and vice versa? Does an Iona Darrick want to wear a heavier shoe? No. You know, she's light and she's nimble and she wants to wear a lighter shoe. So you've got that as an example. So that's why the range is five strong. They are more comfortable. We've tested them. We've put them on players. We've seeded them. Our last release we put out for testing a year before it was released on various players, and they all loved it. And that shoe, called the Wave Momentum, is now selling really, really well. So I think we'll see a few of those in the Super League this season. So that's the philosophy, really. Something for everyone, and let's educate as to what the technology is in those shoes and how it's going to work best for each individual player.
The Netball Show with Andy Lamb and Sasha Shipway.
Katie Stokes is a biomechanics coach who specialises in injury rehab. She's based in South Warwickshire and North Gloucestershire. She's been sharing her thoughts on the current increase in ACL injuries in netball in recent weeks.
Players are getting fitter, faster and stronger, jumping higher, and with that, the injuries are occurring more frequently. And one of my initial reactions was the game is quite different now to what it was. There is a lot more physical contesting. But actually, most of the ACLs that I've managed to see haven't been through an impact. You know, it's just a landing injury or a cuffing injury. So, you know, is the strength not there for them to be able to cope with it? And then, you know, the other angle of, you know, they're female athletes, obviously. So there's so many things that need to be taken into consideration there. With, are they being assessed biomechanically to see if they have a... you know, maybe they might have an increased risk. Do they know that as players, and are they being identified? Is one looking at it. And if you haven't got the mobility in your spine and your pelvis or your ankles, it does normally show up in the knees and a knee injury. You know, are they being assessed for these things? Which, you know, it's highly likely they are, but something's going astray somewhere, is my opinion.
I think I've probably said it more than once on this podcast, but I'm clearly not a doctor, thankfully, but we've seen it so frequently, especially more in the Suncorp at the weekend as well. So is it something you've seen grow over the past couple of months?
As a netball fan, obviously, yes. And it's surprising that it's the Suncorp Super League where it's happening, because they're the full-time athletes, as I understand.
Yeah.
So with the access to the coaches, the physios, you know, the real full-time programmes, it's an interesting angle for me, because are they, you know, the players over here in our league, obviously, you know, it's not the Suncorp Super League. The intensity is higher over there. But our players who don't play full-time or train full-time, they're actually getting more rest, and so therefore able to cope a bit differently. Is the training load being managed? You know, these poor players, especially the ones who've had the World Cup, it's a huge training volume. And, you know, you see people like, obviously, Helen Housby hasn't done her knee, but she's not played for, is it three games now?
Yeah.
And I watched her first game back and she just looked exhausted. You know, so it's sort of, you know, England Road wants to win a medal, but a Swiss want to win the league. And how do you manage that with it? And the other thing that was brought up last night is obviously the development of the netball trainers that people are wearing now with the increased grip, which obviously feels great when you're playing, and the big marketing being, well, there's the decreased movement of the trainer, of like the sideways roll, but that lack of movement has to then be accounted for somewhere else. You know, if you've got a grippier shoe, you then will decelerate much faster. It'll be incredibly abrupt, and the knee has to take that, which it can't always, clearly.
Maybe in the Super League, what do you think on players wearing ankle braces?
You know, I think if you have gone over on your ankle and so strained a ligament before, you may feel safer wearing a brace, and that's going to help obviously protect your ankle from happening again, but that could therefore increase your risk of your knee taking that movement. I think if you haven't had a previous injury of your ankles, I don't think it's the best option to tape up your ankles just in case, because it's very rarely that the knee is the cause of something. It's normally the poor middle sister that gets the blame. So I don't see why you would tape up your ankles just in case. But I can see an argument if you're a player with ankles that have historically gone over a few times, you would want to wear a brace.
One of your tweets yesterday mentioned pelvis stability.
Yeah, and that's a really, really important factor with an athlete, especially a female athlete. If you don't have full mobility of your pelvis, you won't have stability. And vice versa, without stability, you won't have mobility. So when I had a recent client who did rupture her ACL and went down the surgical route, she had a few physio sessions, but was getting frustrated and sort of upset with her progress. We went right back to the beginning and assessed her biomechanics of her pelvis and her spine. And we had a look at her feet as well. But she wasn't, let's say, optimal in her movement ability around her pelvis and especially her lumbar spine. So my very first point of call with her then was to get that moving and stable. So increasing the movement capability and then making her stronger in all those areas and doing lots and lots of strength work from every angle of the pelvis. So obviously everyone is really, really popular at the moment. She did lots and lots of glute work, which are, you know, great for stabilizing the knees and the pelvis, but you can't forget about the other areas as well, which is something that I would sort of tentatively question, is every angle being conditioned correctly?
It sounds a really interesting subject, this whole biomechanics. How fascinating is it being able to pass on what you've learned?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's really fascinating. And as a personal trainer, it has completely changed how I practice, because now when I get injury clients, or obviously post-injury, they want to get back stronger, I explain to them that we are going to go back to the beginning and I assess their movement. You see what their body is able to do, and not everybody is built the same and not necessarily the same from one side to the other. So you can predict, you know, they might be higher injury risk. So you can actually predict that they might be susceptible to an ACL, and then you can work with that. And alongside that, if somebody's knee goes into valgus, which is like the knock-kneed movement of the ACL injury as it happens, there is now a bit of a movement as to training in that injury position. So you're actually putting the knee into that position and then loading it, so it's better able to cope with the stress of being in that position. I think that appears to be quite a new movement. It does seem to be helping and sort of makes sense.
But you will have seen that distraught of obviously not being able to play to that other end where people have actually got through it and got back on court.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine how heartbreaking it is for those players, and it does seem that they know instantly that they've done it, but you can absolutely rehab back from it. I think what was really interesting and really heartbreaking was that Beth Cobden, of course, immediately went again. So we've got to keep everything crossed that she can come back again. You know, very important player for the Roses. You can come back. It's difficult, but it's absolutely doable. You know, it's time and time of strength training and conditioning and a really sensible progression from isolated strength movements to bounding and hopping and a trainer really watching what the player's doing. It's no point that, you know, the player can't go off and do it by themselves, in my opinion, because the trainer needs to be watching and seeing, okay, well, you're not quite right in that landing position. And it's really challenging them because these players are getting so fatigued, so they still have to be able to land safely, even when mentally and physically exhausted.
Chaddy and Louise have obviously said about how important it is to have a team around them. That's a huge part of this as well, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I spend a lot of time mentally supporting my clients, saying that please be patient. It's not a linear process. 1 week you'll be better. 1 week you might feel like you might have gone backwards a little bit. That's completely normal. And reassuring them all the time, just be patient. It's worth the process. You can't rush rehab. Sometimes see it with players or just general public who might have rushed the process and come back too soon. And, you know, there's lots of ways of training of like pre-fatiguing and challenging them so you can see maybe if there's still a risk. But it's absolutely so important to have the team around them, from friends and family to obviously then the professionals.
Plenty of personal trainers around the country. Whereabouts are you based, and how can we get in touch with you on Twitter as well?
So I am just south of Stratford-upon-Avon, and I cover south of there and a bit of the North Cotswolds as well. I am Katie Stokes PT on Twitter and Instagram, and then I am katiestokespersonaltraining.com or Katie Stokes Personal Training on Facebook.
Nathan Bellman is a physio. He's also just done his master's on ACLs. So, Nathan, your thoughts?
There's an element of the sort of change in direction and the sort of nature of the sport, which makes it a more, or the most common injury in netball. It's the most common injury that we do see in netball, close, sort of followed by ankle injuries, ankle sprains. But there's a few sort of different factors that lead to that happening and being more prevalent in netball. Some of those things being that it's sort of gender within netball is predominantly sort of female, so females are definitely more likely to have an injury in netball, and we see that females have generally move a bit differently to males, so that puts them at more risk of injury as well. Definitely in sort of netball, it's the change in direction and the landing mechanics which make a big difference in ACL injuries.
And we're quite lucky because it's something that you've looked at in depth for your masters.
Yeah.
What else did you find?
So there are some, obviously there's factors that surround the injury, ACL injury in females and in netball. So there's some things that we can change or have potential to change, and there's things that we can't really change. So there is a nature element to any injury and to ACLs. So certain things that we potentially can change and risk factors would be sort of landing mechanics, landing education. So trying to teach young netballers especially how to land properly, making sure they've got adequate strength to be able to control those landing mechanics. So that should help to protect the ACL. And those landing mechanics being that we shouldn't be landing on an extended knee. We should be able to land on a flexed knee and a flexed hip. So that's one of the most common movements that we see the ACL rupture, or we think the ACL ruptures, is that when an athlete is landing on a extended hip and knee, or two extended hip and knee, rather than a good flexed hip knee position. And also where the knee rotates inwards or like a valgus position of the knee, we see that quite common, especially in netball in particular, that's sort of a potential for injury. And then unfortunately there are areas that we can't really change or we can't influence. So there's some structural areas that we see ACLs rupture. So there's particular things like the anatomical features that are in certain people's knees, which makes them more likely to have an ACL tear. And then things like the weather on slippery surfaces, it's potentially more likely to have injuries. So there's things that we can control with that. So
I assume you would do a lot of work on the prevention of ACLs as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's where sort of as a team we come into it. So it's a big S&C element. Having some pre-season testing is quite important, so we can try and highlight any areas for potential. So there's not enough real sort of good evidence to say that we can prevent ACL injuries, but there's an idea that there's enough evidence to say that we should try and prevent that by being nice and strong and teaching good habits in landing and jumping.
Athletes naturally want to get back playing as soon as possible, but
absolutely
there'll be that danger where they're maybe over keen a little bit and you need to hold them back a little bit almost.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some good sort of return to play criteria for ACLs, and we sort of try to follow those as good as possible. There are some of them a bit individualised, but there are some sort of tests that we do use to try and highlight when the athlete's ready. Half of that battle is psychological and making sure the athlete's ready to return to play and that they've had enough exposure to play time, game time to return back to that. But you're, with any ACL sort of reconstruction, you're looking at a good year's recovery, really. And it's at that level of play, it's unlikely to get back prior to that. And that's sort of a pretty much set rule, really, sort of time frames. And it's just having a good relationship with the athletes and making sure that they're sort of on board and they know what to come. So with any athletes, especially with ACL tears, it's just being honest and setting milestones and saying this is what they're going to achieve, this is what they should expect to be back playing.
And maybe the mentality as well, equally important as the actual physical side?
Absolutely, yeah. So there's a big psychological element, especially in that return to play, and it's just setting good, clear goals and keeping them motivated, especially at like a high level of sport, so they can become quite low and their mood can definitely become reduced. So just make sure they've got a good network behind them, really.
It's certainly an interesting subject. Remember, share your views online. We're at The Netball Show to join the debate, and watch out for part 2 of our ACL special, including Nick from Storm and more on ACL prevention.
I can't put into words still how special it feels. It's such an honour to be asked to lead your country.
Silence means so much to me. It's more than just wearing the dress. It's about hopefully inspiring the next generation.
Welsh netball is in a really strong position at the moment. We're growing and we're looking forward to the upcoming season.
What do you remember most about that first cap?
The first cap, God, very little. That's a long time ago, very little.
Thanks so much for everybody's support, and especially those at the Netball Show, because I know you've supported us for a long, long time.
The Netball Show with Andy Lamb and Sasha Shipway.